You listen to the High Spot Podcast. Brian, how are you?
How you been? How you been, buddy?
How are the kids?
How are your wife and my kids?
Oh, long hiatus. Good to be back.
I'm glad I'm able to talk now.
I know. We'll get into that, too.
Exactly.
Lots of stuff going on in the world. Yes, in the world. And we've been in it and have experienced it. So, Brian, let's talk about the finals, the so-called NBA finals.
Okay, I was about to ask you which one, because we had two finals. And in my opinion, not to get ahead of you, but NHL's postseason did a phenomenal job. I mean, every single series, you had Game 7. NBA Finals, you know, lived up to par, too. It was just great. If you're a sports fan of both hockey and basketball, you were satisfied by the end of both series.
You know, I've been surrounded by the NBA. It's been NBA, 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 and I was looking forward to the playoffs and the finals. We had a good matchup. It was Cleveland and the Warriors, so I'm like, yes, LeBron versus Curry, you know, is going to be competitive, but...
Yeah, it wouldn't have been the same if it was the Hawks and the Warriors.
No. Yeah. Nobody would have wanted to see that, but again, we think we're going to have a competitive NBA finals, then Kyrie gets hurt, Kevin Love was out of it in the first round, and basically it was... We have lots to get into, and this is another thing that's going to bother me that I'll get into later, but yes, the NHL Finals clearly surpassed the NBA Finals, which everyone hyped up. I know a lot of people were like, oh, this NBA Finals, you got to see it, especially the Western Conference. But let's face it, the NBA fell flat in the playoffs. And the exciting team won. The Warriors finally play like the Warriors, and they won. And one thing I want to touch on is everybody's feeling sorry for LeBron. You get on social media and you see all these things. Oh, it was LeBron versus the Warriors. Oh, you know, if LeBron only had a competitive team. How about this? How about LeBron is the GM of that team? LeBron is the guy that's brought in Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving. Yes, you can't help the fact that they got hurt. But that bench, I mean, that bench was filled with his boys, his golfing buddies, just his friends. Because if you look at that bench and you see James Jones, you know, Mike Miller, Sean Marion, Kendrick Perkins, they didn't even see the floor. So I don't want to hear anyone feel sorry for LeBron James. Yes, it was a great effort. Probably one that you won't ever see again, because I've never seen a guy carry his team as much as LeBron did.
Not just ever again, but you look at the type of mileage LeBron's had. He's been in the finals, the last five seasons. That's a lot of basketball to be playing in a short period of time to be resting. I mean, you even saw it in the finals, too, where he was cramping up. His knees were kind of giving him problems.
Oh, he's just beat tired.
Just beaten up. How much more can he keep going?
You know, and a lot of questions arise now whether David Blatt stays with the team, whether LeBron just thinks that Blatt is the right leader for this team. Well, we all know LeBron is a leader, but just the right coach for this team. And J.R. Smith was horrible. Iman Shumpert, my God, did not show up every time. He had no confidence whatsoever. Every time he had the ball late in the series, he just kept passing it up. I mean, he had layups, clear layups, and just pass it out to the three-point line. Iman Shumpert, a lot of questions whether, whether he should stay on the team. J.R. Smith, again, is J.R. Smith. That's the reason why the Knicks gave up on him. So lots of stuff to discuss. But the NBA Finals, Brian, did you think that the NBA Finals lived up to the billing that everybody was saying? Everybody was like, oh, this is going to be the best finals. Yes, on paper, we got the matchup that we wanted, Cleveland and the Warriors. But other than that, can you really say that this NBA playoffs really outshined any playoff in memory?
Well, from what I recollect of the playoffs, especially the finals between the Cleveland Browns, I'm thinking of our Johnny Manziel football seasons right around the corner, believe it or not.
Idiot face, as Seth Rollins calls him.
But the Cleveland Cavaliers against the Golden State Warriors, this is kind of the matchup you wanted. Like I joked it before, you know, you didn't really care if the Atlanta Hawks were going to be in the finals or some other Western Conference team. You expected Cleveland and Golden State to be there in the end. I picked Golden State to win it all. And in terms of a series, it was entertaining. Did it live up to its billing? I don't think so. I think the only thing that lived up to its billing is a lot of people who are LeBron haters out there probably enjoyed the fact that LeBron lost in the series.
And I'm torn. I'm in the middle. I don't know whether I dislike him. I don't hate him. I don't know whether I dislike him or I wanted to cheer for him. Because let me tell you something. This finals really took a turn when Cleveland went up 2-1. So that was exciting. I was
or
like,
basically,
wow.
LeBron went up 2-1.
LeBron
against
went up 2-1.
The Golden State Warriors.
And you know, you're thinking, whoa, you know, where are the Warriors going to show up? You know, then you're thinking, oh, the experience. The Warriors haven't been there before. LeBron James clearly has been. You know, was that going to be an issue? What was up with the Warriors? They were so flat. Curry was just not shooting properly. Klay Thompson was out of it. Draymond Green was out of it. And then, you know what? The funny thing is, as soon as the light bulb went on for the Warriors and Iguodala came in the game, and that's funny too. He wins the MVP and he holds LeBron to like 33 points per game and stuff, and he gets the MVP for being a defensive specialist. Where it's amazing because if Iguodala wasn't on the team, you see LeBron score 40 points, 45 points per game.
Maybe 50, who knows? But you made a great point there where it's like not just of the finals MVP, which we'll get on to a little bit later, but the mere fact that this could have easily been Cleveland up 2-0 because you saw it from the beginning. I mentioned this before when we saw game one, game two. It just looked like the Golden State Warriors were very passive. It could be maybe experience. LeBron's been there definitely before. Not all the Cleveland Cavaliers teams and the bench has been there before, but LeBron certainly has. And you kind of had that feeling that, wow, they kind of got away. They kind of flipped the switch in game one towards the very end, got away with a win, which they probably shouldn't have won. And it could have easily been 2-0. And you had the feelings when it was 2-1 that maybe does LeBron have enough where he can carry this team on his back and actually win a championship on his own? We've seen him do it in the past when he was with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
In the first round of the finals.
It wouldn't have shocked me if that happened. But yeah, if Golden State would have lost this series, I would have told you it had nothing to do with LeBron James. As great as an athlete as he is, as tremendously skilled and determination and grit, and he's basically a one-man team. To me, if the Golden State had lost this series, it would have been they would have lost it because they didn't play up to par. We saw in Game 4, we saw in Game 5, and especially in Game 6, especially 5 and 6, that this team can score points. They had to stay aggressive, and they couldn't worry so much about the LeBron James factor. He's going to get his points in. So you had two ways of playing him. Either you kept LeBron from scoring and had everybody else score against him, or what they did was basically isolate. Iguodala did a great job on LeBron James, but again, you can't expect him to hit 40, 50 points every single game.
And you know what the turning
LeBron
point of that game was? I don't want to say Iguodala on LeBron, or I mean just Iguodala on LeBron James all in general. I want to say that the Cavaliers in Game 3 just gave everything they could. Dellavedova was done after that game. I mean, he had to go to the hospital, get IVs, was dehydrated, just spent, okay? And that, to me, was a turning point because they gave such an effort that they had to give even more of an effort in the next games for them to even win another game. So you're telling me all the Warriors had to do was just find themselves, and that was it. But the Warriors at, like, 90% were going to be the Cavaliers no matter what. It's just right now that the Warriors at that time were playing, like, 70%.
Yeah, but that factor of finding yourself, it becomes so critical. How many times in every sport that we see, Jeff, do we see teams that are so more talented, and you're thinking, okay, as soon as they start figuring it out and they flip that proverbial switch, it's going to change.
Oh, I know,
and
but
teams less talented end up winning games or series they're not supposed to win.
The Warriors at 90% with a switch on, we're going to beat the Cavaliers no matter what. It's just that they weren't.
I just think
it,
when it was, I think when it was 2-1 though in the series, people, especially Golden State Warriors fans and the team itself, were starting to get a little worried. Like, wow, we're letting this slip away. You know, it's kind of like that snowball. You know, you don't know how to stop
plays
the momentum.
It up, saying, and then, like, yeah. Oh, the Warriors. You know, look, the Warriors have won over 60 games for a reason. And yes, sometimes there were lulls in the playoffs.
There's that pressure, though. You've won 60 games, but then all those games in the regular season mean absolutely nothing unless you win in the finals and win that championship. Four games. If you can't win four games in the finals, then all those victories, all the league MVP, all the accolades individually and the whole team effort they did this season would have been a huge waste. So to me, the pressure was more on the Golden State Warriors than it was the Cleveland Cavaliers, because nobody really expected them. Even when you had Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love part of the new trio, which what people were talking about when LeBron came from Miami,
three.
The next big three, nobody really expected them to make it to the finals. So they were actually
in the Eastern Conference, I would have totally thought they could make it to the finals this year.
No, yeah, but I'm saying that when the season started, nobody expected this team. You thought they were going to be a playoff contender, but you had no idea they were going to be into the finals their first season when LeBron came over.
I mean,
course,
they went to the finals the first year with the Heat, so I would have not thought any different with the Cavaliers.
I would say with the Heat was a more talented team or had more, you know, depth in the bench than this team here this year with the Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, I just thought they were playing with house money. That was my opinion. That's how I felt it was.
I think once they got to the finals, they were playing with house money because nobody thought with the talent that the Warriors had, I think they were playing with house money.
Yeah, so the pressure was kind of off Cleveland. And LeBron put pressure on himself, and he wants to win a championship. He doesn't want to lose it. But again, they had nothing to lose at that point.
So as Brian was getting prophetic with me before, and he was getting all telling me, oh, you know, it's series and all that, the finals MVP was kind of like, you know, you're used to the stars winning the MVP. You're used to the Jordans and used to the Magic Johnsons. You're used to the Shaqs. You're used to the, you know, LeBron James winning the MVP. So it was kind of a little bit, eh. And no offense to Iguodala, because he did a tremendous job. He was a huge spark for the Warriors, but could you have made a case that LeBron James could win the MVP? Now, mind you, it's only six games, and it wasn't that close. But do you think there's a discussion, and this bothers me because I don't think there should be, but do you think there's a discussion that he should have been the MVP of the playoffs or the finals?
Well, it bothers you, but we're having a discussion regardless because we're talking about it
time
now.
That's what we got to do.
I know. We could talk about other stuff besides this. Let's talk about something else. But no, the discussion will always be put out there. And it depends on what side you see it from, Jeff, because you could see it from the side of when you really look at the entire playoff run and the importance of what one player is to a team. It comes back to the same situation of league MVP, right? If you took this player away from the team, how important are they to the success of that franchise or organization? LeBron, this whole playoff run has been that. He has been the backbone. He's been carrying this team. He carried them to the finals and almost, I would say almost, not that it was that close, but again, almost, he would have been up 2-0 in the first two games if not Golden State had finally woken up somewhat to win an NBA championship. So I can understand if they don't label it well either. If the MVP for the finals were for just the final series, LeBron James basically almost scored 40 points every single game, basically was the entire team for all six games, you could put a case there for it. Now, in terms of other, you know, sports, or like we always like to talk about a sport that we enjoy very much, the Conn Smythe or the playoffs, that they specifically say it's for the entire playoff run when you make it to the finals. So who's ever been the most important, not just in that series. So a case can go for both. It depends how you look at it. I think people sympathetically want to give it to LeBron because, wow, he's the heart and soul and he's LeBron James. You know, he's the face of the NBA. Why not get it? And you give it to someone like Iguodala who...
Well, why not Steph Curry? I mean, yeah, he couldn't find his shot the first couple of games, but I think he was instrumental in Cleveland.
But then you look at it in terms of consistency. I mean, Curry has, you know, the first three games, maybe the first four, you could say he was kind of shaky finding his game. He still scored points. He still came up with big shots, got some games into overtime, but he wasn't as consistent as we've seen him in the Eastern Conference and in the quarters and semis. So maybe that's why. And just the testament, anybody who can go one-on-one with LeBron James for a series deserves to get the MVP. And you know, he scored 40 points, though, but he's still able to keep him in check somewhat. So that in itself is an accomplishment, wouldn't you say?
You're right, definitely. And again, but the idea that people feel sorry for LeBron James. I mean, yes, he put on a effort. And when they were up 2-1, I actually was cheering for him because, you know what, that it was a monumental... You know, just monumental the way he played. And so I was like, wow. But then I realized, I stopped and think, I was like, wait a minute, these players that he surrounded himself with kind of was his doing. He is the GM. He is the heartbeat of that team. And I also think that come this offseason, Cleveland's already said that they want him to be involved with the team as far as like player acquisitions, and they want to get his input. And
it looks like they're planning LeBron's career after he plays basketball, which is ridiculous.
Well, not even that. I just think they want to keep him because he can opt out.
Well, yeah, I was being sarcastic. They want to please him for as much as they possibly can. And this goes to another debate you and I talk about besides, you know, whole feeling sorry for LeBron, is how much control can you actually give players in an organization.
It's not good.
We watched the Nets. We were fans of the Nets when they're in Jersey, and how Jason Kidd, you know, got Byron Scott fired, and he wanted this guy to come in because an organization goes so far to please a certain player. Now, again, you can't compare anybody to, like, for example, Michael Jordan or LeBron James now, who's the, you know, supposed successor of Michael Jordan. You're doing everything to keep them there and to please them. But then it comes to the point, too, where you and I have talked about time and time again. Where do you draw the line? Because you said jokingly, and though you're saying it in jest, it's somewhat reality that LeBron James is the head coach of this team and the general manager, because all the decisions are going through him. Because if he's not happy with it, you know what? He's got that, you know, little ticket or basically something he can hold them to hostage for. Hey, I'm going to opt out, so you better make me happy.
Which it
otherwise,
would be
I'm
just,
leaving.
You know, crazy if he decided to opt out of Cleveland again. I don't think he could do that to the city anymore. But again, he holds that card. But it's just, again, it just shows you why the NBA, at the end of the day, you can hype it up. I can be surrounded by a bunch of NBA guys that, you know, actually make me get into the NBA again. And I remember I tweeted out in game three that, wow, this game is the reason why I enjoyed basketball again. But then LeBron goes on and says he's the best player in the world. And then you see stuff like that, and you hear that he's going to have input on the team. And if David Blatt loses his job after this series, it's a crime, because you know what? To handle that ego and to make it to the finals and come two games short of winning a championship, I give him tons of credit. And it would just be just unfortunate that if he, you know, loses his job, it's because he just, you know, LeBron didn't see him fit as to coach the team. And look in the mirror, Kevin Love might opt out, and you had Andre Wiggins in Minnesota, and I'm pretty sure he would look good in a Cavalier uniform right now. But you're not worried about the future. You're worried about winning now.
Exactly. And then all those things are basically stuff you deal with, whether the coach gets fired, whether you second guess yourself and say that it would probably have been better to keep Wiggins instead of training him for Love. I mean, when you looked at it on paper, it made sense. Maybe not to give up that much for Kevin Love, but, you know, in Minnesota, he was great. But then moving to a different system and going into a different role didn't live up to the hype. I get it. Those are all stuff you look at now, glancing and saying, okay, well, I could have second guessed myself. But you're right, Jeff. This finals, as we talked about before, lived up to hype in a certain way. You look at the ratings, it was probably one of the most highest rating NBA finals series-wise, because everyone wanted to see these games and it was exciting. But one thing I have to do disagree with you is that, I mean, you're around NBA guys most of the time. So am I, for the most part, not as much as you are. But I do get that sense what you're talking about, how, you know, you're starting to feel that passion. You look at the game like, oh, wow, this is why I like watching basketball. True. But it's still, and I've been critical of being very critical or being very down on the fact of the way the NBA
officiates. Every time I bring it up, you're like, oh, you're not talking about the NBA right now.
I'm able to step back and say, you know what? This was a really good series. And actually, I did enjoy watching it from time to time. But the things like with player calls, and you and I can now spend 2 hours talking about the officiating in this series and how bad it was. And from like all the calls that LeBron James had, and then people go and talk about, you know, stars are supposed to get those calls, you know, because they're the stars. You look back in the 1990s, 1992, 93, 94. I know, different era. I get it. But that, to me, was the purest form of basketball. It was physical. It was grinding.
And they're going to get honest because we lived in the past. But you know what? The past was the best era.
Yeah. And well, so now, Australian. The past is in the past.
Well, now you have to get used to the diva-ish in the players. But I just going back, and we'll wrap it up because we're going to talk about a great Stanley Cup finals, mm-hmm. or maybe just great Stanley Cup playoffs in general, because the Tampa Bay Lightning at the end were just the wounded warriors. But, you know, again, it just shows you, I can't think of any other sport where the player has so much say. I mean, not even Mike Trout in baseball. I mean, A-Rod maybe had some say when he was a free agent. And maybe, you know, when he was at his peak, he had some kind of intel on the players that are going to be, you know, acquired. But I can't think of any other sport. Not in hockey. You know those guys are humble
guys.
Not
even in football, too, where you're trying to build around a quarterback, just the quarterback
maybe
that
Peyton
much power.
Manning, maybe because you just want to please Peyton or Tom Brady. But even Tom Brady takes less money to bring the players on the team. And you don't, you know, I mean, I just don't see any other sport. That's why it's hard for me to identify.
And just real quick, with Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, like you mentioned before, these guys have already won championships or have been league MVPs and have broken so many records. To finally have that type of power. Now, I know LeBron's won already. Has won his championships, but still, even prior to that, He still had that power.
It's going to be four now, LeBron. Four NBA. He's lived in the finals, but that's four NBA Finals losses now.
Now, if you're a Cleveland Cavalier fan or just a fan of LeBron James and not a hater like most people are, you're concerned now for the longevity of LeBron. He's still a young guy, but
what I saw
in the finals right now, that's just too much wear and tear. His minutes have to go down drastically if he expects to play any longer in this league, because this league, although it's not as physical as the past that we like to talk about, it's still wear on your knees and your body running up and down that court.
At the end of the day, players are going to want to play in Cleveland because of LeBron, and they're going to get players there, but I would say maybe two or three good years left in him to play at his level. And after that, he's going to be a ball distributor. And, you know, he wants to pass the ball. He'd rather pass the ball and, you know, maybe rebound and make the big shot, but he'd rather pass the ball. And that's the good thing about LeBron. And I think in a couple of years, he's going to have to be more of a ball distributor than he can't do this again, dude. He can't do that anymore, or else
he defines logic. Yeah, you and I can say maybe he can, maybe he cannot, but in terms of my opinion, in terms of long term, whether he can do this, you know, four more years or five straight more years, I doubt it, because the body can only take so much. And as the years go by, you know, even when he made the transition from Miami Heat to the Cleveland Cavaliers, he went through a drastic diet change. I mean, you don't do that until you start realizing that, you know, you're not moving as well as you once did. And to make the type of drastic change in your body to limit the weight that you're carrying on your knees and just the wear and tear that the lower extremity takes, is clear signs that LeBron is aware of it, and he better be aware that he can't keep doing this much longer.
He took the week off into Miami to recharge his batteries.
Take a vacation during the season. When has that ever happened?
He can't, you know, you can't use him that way in the regular season. Now you're gonna have to rest him for the playoffs. And again,
Popovich made it so famous about resting players.
What other sport do they rest players to get to the playoffs?
Blame Popovich now, because he made that
popular.
Smart.
It's his team.
But now everybody's
copycat. Everyone's a copycat.
Copycutter league, man.
Cookie cutter league, you said. Copycat league.
I said copy cutter. No, that's my that, oh, that's me saying
cutter.
It.
Oh, gotcha.
Cookie cutter right now. I can go for some cookies right now. I have some delicious macadamia nut cookies.
Oh, and now you can chew, which is a good thing, which is part of why we've been on hiatus.
Well, not just that.
No, it's
main. Don't blame me. Come on.
The man can finally talk. This guy had his, maybe I'm exaggerating, his jaw wired shut, and it was maybe the best.
Figuratively.
Maybe it was the best month of my life, because when Brian got on the phone, I would do all the talking. But anyways, yeah. Brian, again.
It was great for me, because I could rest my mouth for a while instead of yelling at Jeff every single time. But yeah, I had my wisdom teeth taken out, or one side of it, and it wasn't painful. It just took a while for me to get used to talking normally. I would talk like I had something stuck in my mouth, like some tobacco or something like that. And it was really weird and tough. And it's a mental thing. It sucks because you so badly want to eat your regular food, like pizza and wings and
but
all
that wouldn't
things
stop you from game seven, though.
No, absolutely not. I don't care. Just stick some gauze in the openings where my wisdom teeth were, and I'll play. But again, you know, that's a different comparison. Hockey players and basketball players are two different types of animals.
And you're still not done, though, right? You got to go back.
Yeah, I got to go back. So that's why I said not yet, because I'm going to have to go back for the other side in a couple of weeks. But hopefully it won't affect us being on the air in the high spot. So.
Talk about bad luck and bad genes, huh?
Yes. Well, I've learned to live with it. I don't complain
about
it.
But you're a trooper, though. You're a trooper, though. I mean, all the other times that you probably were like uncomfortable, you know, and not showing it. So you're a trooper. You're a hockey player. And
I have the hockey player mentality.
How do you feel now? Do you feel better?
I feel better now. I'm able to eat normally now. Still have a couple of openings there that haven't closed up yet. But, you know, now it's time to go to the other side now, because that was my main concern. I didn't want to get the other two out knowing that I couldn't chew on one side.
Yeah, you had a lot of dilemmas. You were wondering, should I get all of them done? Maybe two at a time.
Oh, my mother will be the first one to say that it was best for me to get one side, because this time I had a way to chew the other one. But
and who knows best,
looking, yeah, exactly. Who knows best but mommy? But looking back at it now, I'm still drawn whether I would have done all four. Because now, by this time, I would have been done. I would have been back to 100% me normally, and I don't have to worry about it anymore. But I have to go back in for the other two. And at least I know what to expect now. Before it was the dilemma of not knowing. Now I do.
So we're going to monitor Brian's status and savor every moment that he's able to come join us on the high spot. But lots to talk about, too.
Thank you for the flowers.
Oh, of course. And
let's go into major surgery.
We have a great show for you today because, you know, we're going to talk about missing teeth and we're going to talk about hockey soon. Blackhawks, 3 out of 6 Stanley Cups. Can you call them a dynasty? A lot to talk about. And, of course, free agency 2 NHL draft here on the High Spot. I am Jeff Martin, Brian Berga, back, able to talk. And we got more for you coming up next.
Be back after this.
No, not like that. All right, we're back here on the High Spot with my tag team partner, Jeff Martin. I'm Brian Berger. Catch us on High Spot Podcast. And, you know, we were just talking about the NBA. We'll have Justin Labar on very shortly, thanking him for his time. You can catch him at Justin Labar on Twitter. Jeff, it's funny we go from one side of the NBA Finals, you could debate whether it's lived up to its hype or hasn't. And now we move on to the NHL playoffs and the Stanley Cup Finals. And for me, the playoffs, the finals, all of it lived up to its billing. I could have gone for another game. I could have lived with another game 7 because I picked Chicago in 7. But
you won though game 6.
Yeah, but I was kind of rooting for the Lightning in a way. But anyway, they won in 6 games. I don't have to buy you a dinner, thankfully. Yeah, just it's been an all around great playoff run and Stanley Cup Finals that for me has definitely lived up to the hype.
I mean, it has. But you would have liked to seen the Lightning, you know, maybe play with a full roster that wasn't hurt, as we found out after the Stanley Cup Finals, that we were notified that Ben Bishop had a pulled groin, Tyler Johnson had a broken wrist, and again, we were talking about before during the break about Mike Milbury, and we were like, come on, dude. Like, I mean, you think that it shouldn't have been stated like 20 seconds after the Stanley Cup Finals that they were injured? Who cares? They showed up. They played anyways. It's not an excuse. You're the media. We knew what was going on. We knew it. So, I mean, it's not you're breaking news. It's stuff that you already knew. Even they said it, too. They're like, well, it's not like we didn't know, but, you know, they finally came out and said it. I mean, it takes nothing away from the Blackhawks.
No, absolutely not. And he was, and they joked about it, but I think he was just cranky because he was up all night. I mean, it takes absolutely nothing away. To me, what it showed was not only how hard it takes to become a champion, to win the Stanley Cup championship, which in my opinion is the toughest championship to win. You know, you want to talk about the NCAA tournament, you want to talk about the NFL, the Super Bowl, you want to talk about the NBA championship. To me, the Stanley Cup is the hardest one to have. When we see guys
16
like Taylor
wins, baby.
Exactly, 16W. And when you see guys like Tyler Johnson with a fractured wrist, still playing. Ben Bishop, a partially torn or fully torn groin, we don't know yet. Playing goal, making the saves, Jeff, like you had mentioned before. I mean, it just shows you the heart and grit and determination and the passion that these guys are willing to sacrifice their bodies. I know that saying gets used a lot, but these guys are literally sacrificing their livelihood, their health, to win a championship and just to count themselves to have their name plastered on that Stanley Cup for forever.
Yeah, and again, it wasn't anything disparaging towards the Blackhawks. They won the cup. Now, 3 cups in 6 years, do you consider it a dynasty? In this NHL, I do. You know, you can say maybe back in the day with the Islanders winning 4 in a row, maybe that's a dynasty, or maybe, you know, 2 and 3 years, 3 and 4 years. But let's face it.
Would it make more sense if the Blackhawks had won back-to-back Stanley Cups? Which is possible. You can win back-to-back Stanley Cups, had a grace period of maybe a season or two, and then another one. Would that make it more? I suppose there's a year gap in between.
Yeah, people don't like the year gap, you know,
yeah,
especially
if
there's
reason.
Like this team like the Spurs, they didn't win the back to back. So that's what Phil Jackson always harps on them, is like, how can you call them a dynasty? But, you know, all in all, you know what? That's people like me and you to discuss. You know who's laughing and smiling are the Chicago Blackhawks, because they don't care dynasty schminesty. They got a ring. They're gonna, you know, they got a ring and they get to sit from Lord Stanley's Cup. So all the stuff that we talk about and all the media that, you know, that talks about, oh, dynasty, oh, greatness, whatever like that. You know what? They don't have the ring. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Blackhawks could care less. They're sipping from the Stanley Cup. They were parading with it around. So, you know, kudos to them. Are they a dynasty in this NHL? Yes. And what I take out from the NHL now is, man, that speed. It's all about speed. And like you said, finesse. I mean, this NHL, they just keep getting faster and faster and faster. And the goalies keep getting bigger and bigger. Oh, yeah, and the net gets smaller and smaller, but it has nothing to do with the size of the dimensions of the net. It's just the equipment gets larger and larger. You and I talked about this when we were talking about the NBA Finals, of how, people will accuse me of just going always referring to the past, which everybody does. I mean, when you look at it, the past is a lot better than what the present and the future was, and you don't know what, have any idea what the future is going to be until you actually get there. So you can only think about what's happening right now, and to me, Jeff had mentioned it, like I talked about before with him. I was like, man, you look at this. It's so fast. You see the skill these guys have, especially guys like the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, Jeff had mentioned, too, that this team, the Chicago Blackhawks, when you looked at them on paper, impressive team, but they didn't look as if they were going to be a team that are going to go on a playoff run. They had the experience of winning cups before in the past, and you're like, okay, well, they have that experience to go with. But when they were getting trampled by the Anaheim Ducks, I was thinking, man, I'm surprised that these defensemen are going to make it till game four, because it was that bad. But they fought through it and got through it, and some of it's experience, some of it's skill. But again, talking about a dynasty in this day in the NHL and a salary cap type of league, when you have guys like Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Corey Crawford, for the most part, probably was going to be pulled and not even thought of even playing this playoff run, and makes it to the finals and basically just steals a game, because you couldn't score past him. He's definitely lived up to the billing. We can go Sharp, we can go Duncan Keith. All these greats have been cornerstones, and they might not show in the stats, but they show in the locker room. That's what happens. And that kind of reminds us of the old days of what happened in the NHL, where it was more about finesse, playing defensive one-goal games. I mean, either way, it's still an enjoyable game, but the level of skill that's now going on in the NHL playoffs is ridiculous. And you can only imagine at this point how much more exciting, how much more, I wouldn't say exciting, how much more impactful can it get? I'm waiting for the NHL to start changing the rules even more, saying, you know what, there is no blue line anymore. It's wide open ice, and we're actually going to extend it even wider, like Olympic style, for more space. It's crazy.
And, again, the game just evolves. It evolves. But
as we do.
As we do. And, again, you're listening to the High Spot, and you can follow us at High Spot Podcast. And, surprisingly here in New York, the most surprising thing, too, that I took away from the finals was, the Rangers. I really thought that this was their year to win the cup. And they had, and it was Cinderella so far, because they were winning game sevens. They were winning those games. And I just thought they were going to go on this huge carpet ride. And I was surprised myself where they couldn't score, a goal in two games at MSG. And to me, that was just surprising. And it shows you how, people are going to get on Nash, people are going to get on the King Lundqvist. And I just think, the Lightning were just, it's amazing. They would trade the President's Trophy and give up that game to play on the road, because they played better on the road than at home. And it was puzzling to me.
Well, I've mentioned it on the show before where I felt like the Stanley Cup was the Rangers to lose, because any other team you matched up with them in the Eastern Conference, or even the Western Conference, I mentioned the Blackhawks might give them a run for their money if they met them in the finals, which was a possibility, but it didn't happen. For me, it's one of two things. Either the same old story with the Rangers, they have all this skill, and then when it comes to those crucial moments, either choke. I mean, they made it to the finals last year, but then couldn't do it against the Kings, who basically just flipped the switch and ended up winning the Stanley Cup. And in this situation, I find it similar too, where you feel like all the pressure's on. So, when they have their backs against the wall for so many times, how many game sevens were they in and put themselves to play in that extensive period of time when they could have put games away or finished teams early instead of having to go to game sevens? It wears on you mentally and physically. And I think that was just a testament that maybe they had, ran that option too many times. We're playing that card too many times that it finally caught up to him. And Henrik just looked exhausted. I mean, how many times can Henrik Lundqvist get you out of a jam? You got to score goals. And when that pressure's on and you're expected to score, your President's Trophy, you just said they're President's Trophy winning team. They're expected to score. So now all the pressure's on you. I'm going to make that extra pass, or I have to score. And if you don't, it mentally gets to you.
Yeah, and the Rangers were just as injured, if not more, than the Lightning. And again, it's not an excuse, but at the end of the day, they're going to harp on Rick Nash. They're going to harp on, Hagelin and all the Rangers, and Stepan and all those guys and Kreider. But You look at that team, and I think that team is still built for another run. I think they added a couple more pieces, maybe just me. See, to me, you know, here's my thing. A lot of Ranger fans around here, and they start talking, oh, well, we need another score. Oh, you know, you just need a complimentary guy that's going to take the pressure off these big guys. You're not talking about, you know, another score. And I hear people talking about, oh, let's trade for Malkin, and let's trade, you know, this guy and that guy. And, you know, and of course, Talbot's going to get traded during the draft because, you know what, you just, you know, you have a great trade chip there in Talbot. So, I mean, I think they can add just a couple more pieces, and the team is young, and I think this team has another Stanley Cup run in them. I don't think it's over for the Rangers.
No, I don't think it's over for the Rangers either, but at the same time, when you blow opportunities like they've had, especially this year, the way they were built, and they had depth, they could run four lines with no problem. You begin to wonder how many more times can you make it to the finals? How many more times can you make it to the Stanley Cup finals besides the conference finals? That starts dwindling in your mind. If you're fans, of course, you're going to come out with comments like, oh, we need to trade for a score. It's, you know, the whole Malkin deal that you were just telling me, and you have some trade bait. But at the end of the day, I think if you're the Rangers right now, maybe some tweaks. You don't need to restructure or go huge for a big-time goal scorer, because then if that fails on you, then what else do you have left to fall back on? You lose your depth, you lose the heart and soul of what the team is, and then it becomes back to what Glenn Sather used to do before in the past. Just a team full of stars, and nobody knows what to do, or nobody knows how to play like a team anymore. So you're right, you need those complementary players. But again, talking about, you know, the Rangers and having maybe a couple more good runs left in them, you know, the Blackhawks.
You know, they're probably going to be free agency because they paid tons of money to Sharp, Sharp, and also Taves and Patrick Kane, right?
Yeah, and Patrick Kane.
Patrick Kane.
But again, you know, this team has shown, you know, they're the funniest example to me of what a consistency is now in this league. It's hard to find, especially in the NHL now with salary cap or any organization, whether it be the NFL, you know, whether it be basketball, baseball, salary cap. Well, baseball has no salary cap, but it's hard to keep your stars and hard to keep the team in sync. I mean, the Blackhawks, there's no doubt in my mind they'll probably take a year off, reset. You know, something that gets lost a lot, what I think people don't notice about the Chicago Blackhawks is their farm system. And their ability,
Brendan Saad.
Their ability to find young talent, especially in the draft, which we'll talk about
properly
as the weeks come up, leading into it. That's the most important thing. Because if you're Chicago Blackhawks, yeah, you're going to lose a lot of players in free agency. And maybe won't be a contender next year. But in 2 years from now, 3 years from now, who knows? You have that core farm system in, which I think a lot of teams, especially in sports now, kind of anticipate and just look at it as more trading bait, and it's just stuff I can use as an accessory. And a lot of teams that struggle now in the NHL or just in sports in general really lose sight of that farm system.
And I really think, though, you said a year off for the Blackhawks, but you know what? They might not need to, they're going to lose a couple players, and as you know, and Saad is going to be a key whether they can re-sign him. He's a restricted free agent. That'll be an issue there. But, you know, when you have two cornerstones like Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves, it's much easier to build around your team like that when you have two cornerstones. I mean, they are getting a ton of the money, but when you have two players like that, especially when they show up in the playoffs like they do, it makes it much easier to make a quick rebuild. And for the Rangers, you build from the goalie out. That's how they got to do it. For the Blackhawks, it's going to be, you know what, they got to build with their key players. They keep the goalie. They got you know, they're going to either keep Duncan Keith. What they're going to do with Patrick Sharp? They got a lot of questions, but again, they draft well. And speaking of the draft, we will next week we're going to analyze, you know, the draft that's going to be coming up soon. So lots of stuff to discuss too.
And I'm wearing a Devil's hat right now, which shows me that I'm not expecting anything from this draft.
Well, the sixth pick in the draft, new management. Ray Shear was in there from Pittsburgh, so
they'll still
know.
Pick a defenseman,
and which they said they're not ruling out, so you never know. Another defenseman there.
Because, you know, you still got the president, Lou Lamoriello, back there. And although Shero is the general manager, you never know. It'll be just like, ah, here we go again type of thing. But, yeah, we're looking forward to the draft. It's been an amazing turnaround. If you're a sports fan, Jeff, you have to be excited for the mere enjoyment of watching the NBA playoffs. Every other day you would watch an NBA game, or then the next day, playoff game, vice versa. Now it's kind of died out. We have our champions in the NBA, the Golden State Warriors. What was it, 45 years since they won an NBA title?
Yeah, it's been
that long. the Chicago Blackhawks, which is this modern day's version of a dynasty, are the 2015 Stanley Cup champions. Congrats to them, the Warriors. And now, Jeff, you and I are be, like you said, focusing on the draft. Baseball, All-Star, before you know it, the All-Star break is going to come in, and there are already selections about that going on. We'll dive into that much more. We'll have Justin Labar coming up, folks, you can catch him on Twitter at Justin Labar. He's Jeff Martin. I'm Brian Berga. We'll be back with more on the High Spot. Catch us on Twitter, High Spot Podcast. More right after this. All right, you're listening to the High Spot Podcast. You can follow us on that at High Spot Podcast. And you know, for our next guest, I saw his work, a lot of it, and I was thinking of what song could I give him the right introduction. And I thought this was very fitting.
Would you say this song best describes him?
I would say he would walk out to this one if he could. And that is Justin.
Fight John. Fight.
Fight Justin. Fight. Justin Labar. You can follow him at Justin Labar, and a bunch of things here. The resume is outstanding. Pittsburgh Tribune Review, TribLive.com, has own reality, Chair Shot Reality Wrestling, contributor to such great websites as WrestleZone.com, and he's contributed Bleacher Report, just a bunch of places. And Justin, thanks for coming on and giving us a few minutes.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course, sad news this week with the passing of Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream. Justin, I know you know, you're kind of, you do stay in contact with Cody. Just your thoughts first on the passing of the American Dream.
Well, huge loss. I mean, you'd have to say that next to Vince McMahon, you can make a case that Dusty Rhodes, you know, was as instrumental of the business evolving to the entertainment spectacle that it is, as anybody. You know, I mean, it's crazy to think the guy from, you know, late 70s to, you know, the late 80s was, you know, one of the best draws in the ring as a performer. It's crazy to think he had that, you know, like, if you look at it, it's crazy to think how good of a career he had in that span. And then to think that for the next, you know, almost 30 years, he would do maybe you can consider greater work all behind the scenes, you know, with his contributions to Crockett and the WCW, and then of course the WWE and NXT. So it's hard to even, you know, appropriately articulate. I know he's one of the guys that I really regret that I never got a chance to work with in any capacity, to even interview. So, you know, it's a huge loss for the wrestling world. It's one of those, you know, that you really hope that he truly got to, you know, he affected other people. You truly hope that he got to pass down all of his wisdom to other people, and that his legacy can live on in his work through other people in the business for decades moving forward.
Hey, Justin, it's Brian here. Thanks again for coming on. You're mentioning his body of work, and when I heard about the passing of Dusty Rhodes, it felt like a piece of my childhood had passed away. Now, I remember Dusty Rhodes more from the time he was in the WWE in the 90s when he showed up with the polka dots and he was dancing with Sapphire, because I was pretty young back then, didn't realize the history he had in the past, and you were just mentioning his body of work, and for me, in terms of a legacy, I tend to see Dusty Rhodes more as what you mentioned him in the later stages of his career, that he was more of a, you know, he's doing a lot of booking, he was a mentor, and just to see the reaction when you saw the events they did for him on Raw, the 10 Bell Salute on NXT, and even, you know, NXT on the network, when they mentioned like all the things he had done positively, the special they did after Raw. I mean, in terms of legacy, how do you think, that's kind of a winded question, but what do you remember him for more? Do you remember him more for what he did in the ring, or do you appreciate now what he's done outside the ring?
I remember more for probably his later stages, kind of what you were saying. I remember more for what I learned from the behind the scenes. You know, partially because, you know, I mean, I was born in the mid to late '80s, so I I've seen a lot of his stuff in the ring, but obviously I did, you know, watch it all, you know, as an archive. I wasn't experiencing it live, and I remember what I experienced live, which was a lot of him, you know, commentating for WCW. You know, I remember the polka dot days when I was younger. And
do you think that was a rib?
You know what? Actually, I don't.
It's everybody's debates, and I think nobody will know the answer to that. Even Vince McMahon will probably lie about that. Was that a rib
or
not?
Well, yeah. No, actually, you know, I don't. And I always kind of maybe, I thought it was always an interesting topic, and you can make a case. You know, I mean, from my time that I spent around WWE from my profession now, and I've spent a little bit of time behind the scenes in the past with them, you know, I could certainly understand why one would think that just in the nature of the business. But I actually had a conversation a couple of years ago at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame in Amsterdam, New York, with J.J. Dillon. And J.J. and I were talking about this, and he goes into depth in his book, which I highly suggest for anybody to check out. But J.J. and I were talking about it, and he kind of put it in, and then keep in mind, at this time, J.J. was Vince's right-hand man. You know, Vince really, he's very big about his own creations, not taking something that's created elsewhere. He's really big about his own creations, so obviously, he's going to keep the name Dusty Rhodes. He's not stupid enough to change that. But I think he really felt, you know, let me try to, you know, remember, you know, Vince, you know, Dusty was coming from the wrestling, and to Vince, you know, I'm gonna take this guy who has great charisma and who is unique and has not a flattering look, but can still get a certain elk of the audience behind him, and I'm gonna make something different. And you know, we say it as a rib, but let's look back. I mean, it's almost 30 years ago now. And we remember it so well, and it's not like we remember it and we completely roll our eyes or our stomachs turn. We remember it, and we laugh, and we smile, and we think about the promos. We think about, you know, Dusty and Sweet Sapphire.
I love the way you said it, too.
Well said. Well said.
Yeah, you know, we think about it with a pretty positive tone. And so I think, I don't really think, I'm sure Vince could have got a chuckle, like, oh, this was funny. But I don't think he did it, like, I don't think he's trying to sabotage us. I mean, Vince is not going to waste his time, especially with a guy like Dusty Rhodes, who worked, you know, in the territory days back when Vince's father was still in the territory business. He wasn't going to waste complete time and money. He wants something to work. He just thinks, you know, he has maybe a different sense of humor and says, let's bring the humor out in this. Yeah, so what? You wrestled, you know, how many one-hour matches with Ric Flair over the last 10 years? I'm going to show people that this is entertainment, you know, so we're going to put you in polka dots and put you with a big black woman.
He could have gone out there in a diaper like he mentioned and still would have made it work. That's how talented he was. You didn't
exactly.
Look at the polka dots.
You know,
I mentioned it, but again, that's what I didn't remember from it. He was just that charismatic.
Yeah, you know, back to the original question, I remember the polka dots. I remember a lot more of the later stuff, mostly because, again, I didn't experience the wrestling stuff in the 80s live as much, but I remember all the newer stuff, and there's a lot, and it became a lot of people that I've now worked with today in my career, in one capacity or another, have all gotten to work with Dusty. So, like, and I have to learn more about Dusty behind the scenes. So, I just, the Dusty of more recent is just more, I guess, relevant, just more applicable in my memories to things. I mean, even him as a commentator, one of my favorite bits, and I've been trying to actually find a good, clean soundbite of it to use. One of my favorite soundbites ever. And it's not in the normal highlight reel of Dusty soundbite. Everybody has, you know, the Wine and Dine with Kings
hard
and Queens.
Hard times.
They have all the hard times, right. But one of my favorites, actually, him on WCW commentary, and it was, I believe it was in 1996, Great American Bash in Baltimore. And it was a Falls Count Anywhere match between Chris Benoit and Kevin Sullivan.
Oh, when they went to the bathroom?
And they fall to the bathroom.
Oh, I remember this one, yeah.
And there's two great quotes. The first one is Dusty screaming at Tony Schiavone, Tony, there's a woman in the man.
I remember that exactly.
So he screams that, and then there was something else, like maybe Sullivan or I don't remember who. Benoit hit Sullivan or vice versa. One of them hit the other one with like a plunger or something just ridiculous, just over the top. And Dusty Rhodes goes, WCW with a big boy's clay, Tony. It is so well-timed.
I think it's when Sullivan was shoving Benoit's head down the toilet and just flushing
maybe,
it.
You know,
I think it's probably what's
when
it happened, yeah. But that was a memorable quote right there.
Go on the WWE Network and watch it now.
Oh, plug, look at that. Any royalties again for that?
you never know. They always like it when I show their stuff, so.
It's a lot of people again affected by Dusty Rhodes, and again, you know, Cody Rhodes. You could really tell how close they were and how much affection he had for his dad and respect. And when he talked about him, like in the Hall of Fame in 2007, how do you think Cody Rhodes, we know he's dealing with a horrible loss. And now comes the question of, will he honor Dusty by going back to the Cody Rhodes gimmick? What's your take? Should he stay with the Stardust, or should he, you know, go back as Cody Rhodes?
Well, he should do whatever he wants to do. They should leave this really into his hands. And I mentioned it on my radio show on Tuesday. Knowing Cody, I mean, I know Cody pretty well. We have a pretty good relationship. I haven't talked to him since his father's passed. I mean, I sent him a text, obviously, but I haven't, you know, talked to him, and not surprisingly, and that's completely understandable. But from past conversations I've had with him over the years, especially more recently in the Stardust era, you know, last longer we had, I guess, was Mania Weekend. What people don't really realize is that he, or maybe don't think about it, is that the Stardust gimmick is not punishment from Vince or WWE. It's not a rib. The Stardust thing is kind of his call. That was something Cody wanted to do. Cody kind of realized that, you know, he's been Cody Rhodes for a lot of years, and he's had the dashing gimmick, and he had the legacy gimmick, and he's had a lot of different little incarnations as Cody Rhodes. And I mean, yeah, he's a good looking dude, you know, good looking face, and he's in shape. But when you line him up in a lineup next to John Cena and the Ryback and all these other guys that are successful in WWE right now, he doesn't stand out. He's pretty generic. He's kind of small. And so he kind of understood that. And also he knows that he's carrying the Rhodes name. And oh, by the way, you're coming off of your half brother who, you know, has a great legacy with Goldust and being one of the most bizarre characters. And then of course your father, who is Dusty frickin' Rhodes. And so I think he kind of realized, like, he wanted to do something on his own, much of the same kind of mindset that Dustin had back in 95 when the Goldust character came about. And so, he, you know, the Stardust thing is something that he wanted to own. When he does, you know, when he does interviews, he stays in character during as long as the cameras are rolling. He likes to do that. I mean, I'm talking, you know, 7 a.m. interviews. If he's got to go do press and it's on camera, he is in full bodysuit and makeup. And so my point is, to answer the question, he should do whatever he wants to do. Prior to the passing of Dusty, I would know that he would want to stick with Stardust and he'd want to make his own path. Now, that's not to say that maybe now that this has happened and this tragic passing's, you know, taking place, that he says, okay, maybe I do want to go back and use my name and I want them to mix up my entrance song so I have a little bit of cowbell in it and I want to do the bionic elbow. I don't know. Maybe he does. Like I said, I haven't talked to him. It's my pick, and if he's okay with it, you know, I say let him come out and let the Stardust music hit. He's going to get a giant pop the next time we see him on TV. Let him cut a little bit of a serious promo and then work that into re-energizing this character that's kind of fallen by the wayside. Re-energize it as, you know, so people kind of know, same way we did with Dustin and Goldust. We knew that there was Dustin Rhodes behind the makeup, but let it be he wants to step away from that. He wants to create something new and different. I would try to re-energize that again, if he wants to, but I don't know. I can't even begin to imagine what's in his head, what his thought is of the business and of his career at the moment going through the loss he has. But I don't think, well, I'll sum it up with this, but long freaking winded answer. I'll sum it up with this. I don't think we should jump to, oh, he's got to go back to Cody Rhodes and he's got to basically be a walking homage to his father. Because if he does that, I'm sorry to say that's great right now. It'll get him a great pop now. He might get some big-time feuds over the next 2 months. But unfortunately, that emotional train and that paying tribute train does die out eventually. It does come off to the station and it does die out either when time has passed and people are done, you know, really remembering Dusty heavily like we're doing right now, or when somebody else passes away and that takes the new headline. So if we throw him right back into paying homage to his father, it's the same way maybe as frickin' Macho Man Dal and Axelmania. It's real hot for a minute or two when it's the flavor of the week and it's going good, and all of a sudden you don't really see it for a while. So I don't know. I don't think we need to jump back to that so quickly.
Again, we're joined by Justin Labar. You can follow him at Justin Labar. I mean, his resume speaks for itself. Chairshot Reality Wrestling, TribLive.com. You can catch him on his YouTube channel. I mean, thank you again for joining us.
And just finishing up on Cody, I thought he definitely reached a milestone, in my opinion, when I saw him. This was several years ago, Money in the Bank, when he was going for the Money in the Bank for the world title and got betrayed by Damian Sandow at that time. I thought he had a huge pop. People were cheering for him, thinking, all right, this guy's over. Even though he lost it, he's definitely going to be on the good side of it. And then, you know, things change, and he moved over and did the Stardust gimmick. But then talking about Money in the Bank, you yourself found yourself at the event itself, and just speaking about the event Money in the Bank, you know, looking at the past couple of Money in the Bank pay-per-views, or now it's on the network, a cheap plug there, it's lived up to its billing in a way where it's kind of brought a surprise or something you didn't expect. I mean, one thing I didn't expect was the fact that the New Day, who start off with such a cheap, you know, positive gimmick, and immediately when I saw it, I was like, this doesn't really seem like it's going to last, or people are against it. It's probably going to live up better as a heel, and they're going to hate it so much. Dropping the titles, or, you know, whatever decision that was, to the primetime players, which I couldn't be more excited for, to see them back together. I thought that they hadn't reached their potential as a tag team yet when they got separated. When you saw it here, one or two things: how was the crowd reaction for the event, and were you surprised that they went over with the primetime players to kind of take a little momentum in a way from the New Day?
The crowd reaction was great. It was a packed place. There was no empty seats. It was energetic the whole night, and yeah, I they were surprised for the PTP. They're supportive. You know, that was part of my excitement. I wanted to come out. You know, I'm a huge Titus fan personally and professionally. He was the one that got my tickets. And the funny thing was that the day of the show was like, normally it's not a problem getting tickets, but he had said to me, like, dude, like, he's like, they got the signs up in the backstage saying, you know, we're almost sold out, might not be able to do any comps or whatever. And so I was already there. I was going to go to the show in which way, whether I had to, you know, scalp a ticket or buy one off stuff or whatever. And then just about 2 hours prior, he said, all right, I got you taken care of, and great tickets. And luckily the cameraman who, you know, the one of the cameramen at ringside, Rico, I'm buddies with, and I knew exactly. As soon as it happened, I was so overjoyed with excitement that they followed through with it. I knew it was a possibility, but nothing's for sure with WWE until it actually happens on camera. They can change it a million times. And as soon as I did it, I started doing the dance, and Rico had already knew where we were sitting. And he pointed at a camera. I knew as soon as he points to it, I know not to look at it and just to enjoy it up. And that red light went on, and, you know, I got my 2 seconds in there real quick. And
we have to look back and check that out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just so happy to be I felt great for him. You know, Titus, I mean, both him and Darren, I don't really know Darren, but both of them are good people into that, and they worked their ass off. And I'm just happy to see that. It was a little bit of a shocker, and I'm happy to see. I want to see what WWE does in the long term. I want to see, you know, what challenges they put up against these guys, and make the most of it.
You have a theory on Roman Reigns. You see a heel turn in the works. You know, explain your theory and what leads you to believe that WWE is going to turn him that way.
Yeah, you know, I went against this for the longest time, but it kind of seems, just by the way that everything's going, that, I mean, they've been trying to organically try to build him back up a little bit with the babyface. He was kind of like a sidekick for Dean Ambrose, and now he's doing his personal feud with Wyatt. I mean, you know, it's not a guarantee. I mean, they certainly might just be trying to take really get people organically rallying behind him. So, I mean, they could keep going with the babyface commitment, but, you know, the thing that gets interesting is, if they do, in fact, turn Seth Rollins babyface, which, you know, the fact that he's fighting Lesnar the next pay-per-view or next event, and you kind of think inevitably he's going to lose it to Lesnar, whether it's Battleground, whether it's SummerSlam. The fact that that's going on, they've planted the seed, the problems between he and Triple H. They've obviously started, you know, getting rid of his posse, you know, getting rid of J&J Security from him. It kind of leads to, like, you know, they're going to come to the big crash. You know, Rollins is going to crash and burn the heel, and then, you know, then he resurrects the babyface. Well, if that happens, then now you just lost a major heel. Now, and right now, how it stands, Seth Rollins is your number one heel. Kevin Owens is your number two heel. So you get rid of Seth Rollins, you kind of need another. Top tier heel, especially again with Rusev being out for whatever injury and indefinite that he is. So it wouldn't shock me if they decide to just do what that vocal portion of the audience wants, which is just to give them a true reason to boo Roman Reigns. And hell, even if Roman Reigns became the new assassin, hired gun of the Authority. So It might be time. It might, you know, it might be. It might be a case of where you let Reigns go heel, let it, you know, let ride it for everything it's worth, and then you turn them, and then people will be solidly behind it. You know, I fought that for a lot of months. I fought it leading up to Mania when everybody wanted it to happen, and they didn't, you know, or at least a vocal portion didn't want it to happen. They didn't want him to win the title at Mania. I kept saying no. He put all the stock into Roman Reigns, and if you do the casual fan test again, if you sit down to watch Raw with a guy or a girl who doesn't know much about the product, and you just say who stands out, again, Roman Reigns is a guy who stands out with his, you know, tall, dark, handsome, good looks, and he's, you know, big and athletic. But it might just be time to say, you know what, let's put him to the heel and let's just get what we can get out of it. So I'm leaning more and more towards that. I'll be interested to see how this Bray Wyatt thing pans out. It's all going to kind of depend on Seth Rollins. I think Seth Rollins is the domino effect. Just depending on what happens with him, will then decide where you move the other pieces beneath him.
Yes, thank you so much, Justin, for finally saying that, which I've been trying to get that point across with Jeff for so much. We need a reason to hate Roman Reigns. From your lips to God's ears, hope that happens. Nothing against Roman Reigns.
He's not the biggest Roman Reigns fan.
No, I'm not the biggest. But again, I don't dislike the guy. I would equivalate to the whole John Cena thing, where I just think it's kind of forced in a way. And I always like it better when things just organically happen, and you get a sense from the crowd, who is obviously your audience, but they're not the final decision maker. The final decision maker is Vince. But speaking of, you know, Indian top heels, that would make sense to move Roman Reigns in that direction. Another guy who, to me, his stock, you know, rose the moment he stepped into the door was Kevin Owens. And he had his rematch, a much anticipated rematch. And I can't remember the last time I was ever looking forward to a second John Cena rematch, you know. But this one definitely lived up, even surpassed the first one, where John Cena got his win back. I kind of felt that was going to happen. But at the same time, Kevin Owens still looked that demonic, that mean, like, I don't care what anybody thinks, I'm doing this, kind of bulldozer kind of guy. And my thing is, he's so hot right now. He's the NXT champion. Who knows what's going to happen with the NXT title, but you know he's already signed a contract to be on the main roster. I mean, what's his ceiling stock in terms of, I mean, he's not a young guy, but he's definitely had so many years in the business and has perfected his craft everywhere he's gone and done really well. What's the ceiling for Kevin Owens right now, looking forward into current storylines with John Cena and so forth?
Nah, it doesn't seem like there is any ceiling. I mean, it seems like he's going to lose the NXT title. It would seem to be a logical decision for him to lose the NXT title on July 4th over in Japan to Finn Balor. And then at that point, it's, you know, maybe he finishes and does whatever he wants to do. You know, if there's anything left to do with Samoa Joe and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, for the most part, it's, you know, it's, hey, he's working out on the main roster. Let's move full steam ahead. You know, I mean, it's, we're going to talk about this on Sunday on Chair Shot Reality. And it's basically the question of the segment is Kevin Owens being handled better than any talent they've had in the last 20 years? I mean, it's, you know, and it kind of seems like from the moment he stepped into NXT all the way to now, he's been handled well to the point of he's like a light version of Brock Lesnar. I mean, he's been on programming a lot more consistently and a lot more than Lesnar has, but it's like every promo, every match, whether it be against a Zack Ryder or whether it be against Dolph Ziggler or John Cena, whatever match, whatever promo he's doing, everything has mattered. There's not been one throwaway segment, one throwaway, you can miss this. Everything has been must-see. It's been a point. It has been calculated. It has been, you know, and one of the most troubling things about the creative process in WWE, and it's not to the fault of any one person.
Although we sure like to blame somebody sometimes.
Well, and maybe you can say Vince, but the problem is that there's so many. I mean, there's 16 writers basically on the main staff, and then there's assistant writers, and then you have people that also have saying things, such as Triple H, such as Vince, such as, you know, producers. So the problem is there's too many cooks. There's too many cooks in the kitchen. I mean, an idea can start here, and by the time it gets around the table, it's completely a totally different idea.
And like you said before, a concept can change in the split moment, last second. You don't know if they're going to go through with something or not.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, the amount of stuff I've experienced with, I mean, that's a whole other story. But the bottom line is, there's been a great effort to put together everybody's on the same page in a way that Kevin Owens, and the best thing about Kevin Owens is his realism. He's a heel you know, a lot of heels from the pro wrestling world tend to be, you know, with an air of mystery. You know, they're from parts unknown, or they, you know, they're heels, you know, so you wouldn't dare humanize them, such as talking about their wife and kids like Owens does. But yet his profile picture on Twitter is he and his kids, and he talks about doing whatever it takes in order to provide for his family. That, my friends, is real, because at that point you're like, wow,
I do the same thing.
Yeah. I can relate to this. I can relate to it, and that makes it that much more scary, and you can buy into it, because like this guy he literally will do whatever it takes. He's not a heel that's always, you know, growling and scowling. He smiles even. He could be, it's like he's that enemy that's so close to you, it's scary. And so they have a great thing. Unfortunately, with the oversaturation of the programming, of how much programming there is, I don't know how long that can go, but let's enjoy it while we have it.
No, exactly. I think Bret Hart brought up a great comment once when they asked him, did he prefer being a heel or a face? And he's like, I like the heel. And in the way he did it was he always wanted to make it relatable where you can actually sympathize with him. You just brought the perfect topic with Kevin Owens. You can sympathize with his feelings. Hey, he's doing this because he's doing whatever it takes for his family. And he is kind of like another version of Brock Lesnar.
And he totally won me over. He totally won me over in that interview after he won the NXT title. And Renee Young came up to him and he's like, oh, I'll talk about Sami Zayn, this and that. But, you know, at no one point did you congratulate me about winning the NXT title. You know, stuff like that, where he didn't have to yell, where he just was like normal conversation. That got me. I was a Kevin Owens believer there. But, you know, I'm going to make a prediction, Justin, and tell me if I'm wrong or not. I could see Kevin Owens at WrestleMania fight this man.
Brock Lesnar!
What do you think? Am I far off?
When do you think?
WrestleMania.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's definitely money. I mean, I tweeted that Monday. There's huge money in that match eventually when you get there. Assuming you can keep the aura up of Kevin Owens. It's hard to say if Mania is where the two will be, more specifically where Owens will be in terms of is he still as valuable as he is right now. But yeah, if they can hold Owens like he is whenever, whether it's in the fall or if it's the Mania, but there's huge money in that absolutely.
No, yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And Brian,
I mean, you never know. I mean, WrestleMania is, believe it or not, a long ways off still. But you know, it's
before you can easily say it's right around the corner. Before you know what the best part of WrestleMania is? Is it makes you realize why you like this so much? Because you get the dull sometimes in September, and then you know when you get to WrestleMania season, you realize, wow, this is why I love doing what I do. And I think Brian has a great question here to wrap it up. Here and again, we're talking to Justin Labar, and again, thank you so much for coming on the show. Brian's got a great question to ask you here.
We not only thank you, we adore you, Justin, for coming on. So much of your time is being spent elsewhere too, so take a few minutes here. We greatly appreciate. I mean, I spoke with Jeff about this. I don't know if you've ever had these discussions too when you're first starting your ventures of the media. Was that we'd always joke about how we should always like just talk about wrestling because that's something we just organically like so much and we like and we're not just like we see ourselves as typical fans, but we see ourselves as somebody that, you know, enjoy it from just everything about it, from cameras to booking to characters to whether it's believable, all the aspects we enjoy and we love about. And sometimes we all in general like to think, find ourselves maybe sometimes a little too critical. So when you first started off, could you ever imagine yourself to say, wow, I'm actually doing something on talking about stuff that I really enjoy and love, which is wrestling? I mean, what advice would you give other people, maybe Jeff and I ourselves, who go onto this venture too and trying to make something positive out of this and trying to become like, you know, don't like to take a CM Punk quote here, but kind of like a voice of a voiceless type of thing?
No, Justin, the honest truth is, how do we make cash out of this? You know, okay? Honestly.
That's the true goal.
Let's be honest. Besides, you know, all that wishy-washy stuff that Brian said, which I almost, you know, cried or whatever here. You know, he's getting me all emotional. But really, how the keys to be successful in this and just some of the stuff that you've done and maybe some advice you could give us.
I mean, the biggest thing I can say is find what it is that you offer. It's different for somebody else. I mean, for me, I was extremely fortunate that, you know, I grew up, my grandfather worked, you know, working with promoters. So I grew up with us driving George Animal Steel from airport to venue and stuff like that. And then, you know, I got to shadow and be a fly on the wall behind the scenes at WWE when I was in college, you know, 8-10 years ago. And then, you know, having been trained a little bit in the ring, and now I and one of the writers and owners of an independent wrestling company based out of Pittsburgh that used to have CM Punk and Daniel Bryan and Cesaro as our champions. So, I mean, I've had so many experiences that allows me to, when I'm right, you know, which has allowed me to work 7 days a week. And that's another piece of advice, hustle. You know, there's no days off. I mean, between, you know.
You're everywhere, dude. You're everywhere. I wanted to look up stuff on you, and you're everywhere. I mean, great stuff, dude.
Yeah, there's no, you know, in the words of Vince, you know, sleep is for the enemy, and or sleep is our enemy, I should say. And it's just, but I mean, I was fortunate. I have a vantage point of being able to work both sides of the curtain, and that allows me to bring a different insight to my opinions and to my whatevers. I mean, the best thing I could say is try to figure out what it is I work really hard, because you got to outwork the guy who's competing against you, and then the next thing is just simply, you know, figure out what it is that you can offer. Even if you don't have that insight there, even if you don't have the insight to say, oh, I've been in the ring with this wrestler or whatever. Even if you don't have that insight, still figure out, is there a way you can present it? Is there, you know, for me, I guess it's, you know, I everything's reality, chair shot reality, wrestling reality, you know, my t-shirts, the book of reality. You know, I've worked that gimmick and I've pissed a lot of people off, but at the same point, they keep coming back because they want to read or listen or watch, even if it's just to tell me how much they hate me. You know, figure out what the gimmick is. It doesn't have to always be negative heel gimmick, but figure out what it is you can do. How can you present the idea? How can you present what's going on and stand out? And just like I said, hustle, hustle, hustle. Do it as much as you can do it, because you know, I did it. I hustled for several years while working with mainstream sports, and I'm fortunate to say now that, you know, wrestling, you know, bought my house, and wrestling, you know, and I work just wrestling, and that's my living. But it takes a lot, especially in the day of now where everybody's a quote unquote professional. Everybody's got a podcast, everybody's got a blog, and it's hard to stand out. But also social media is a great tool to try to really hustle and stand out. So,
and I think that one of the most inspiring documentaries and DVDs was Paul Heyman. That was a great one. That really motivates, because he had to hustle his way to get where he is too. And
absolutely, you brought him up. Not to name drop, but
no, please. Hey,
go ahead, name drop. We love it.
No, I mean, one of the best pieces of advice was given to me by Paul, and it was, and I think I've heard him say it other places. So it wasn't like it was like this exclusive, you know, Mr. Miyagi, Danielson moment. But he said it to me in a very profound way, in a very good moment. He said, "Don't be afraid." He goes, "Don't be afraid to fail." "Don't be afraid to fail." He goes, "If you're not scared of that," he goes, "you are dangerous, especially in this business where everybody's so insecure." And that's kind of that.
Yeah, definitely great advice. Just real quick, Justin, like I said, thank you for your time. Something I want to know, your favorite wrestler growing up and why?
Probably Jake the Snake Roberts.
Yes.
As a kid, because I was scared of snakes, it was so enthralling. His whole thing was over the top. And then as I got older, I just appreciate so much of the psychology and the brilliance behind him.
I'm sure you were happy when he went to the Hall of Fame, too. That was a great speech by him, too.
Hey, Justin, really appreciate the time. You know, hopefully, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but maybe we can get you on like towards like maybe at the end of SummerSlam. Maybe you can, you know, help us talk about that. But again, appreciate the time.
I'll be in New York for about 7 days of the week.
Oh, that's great. I'll keep in touch then.
There you go.
Okay, Justin, thank you very much. Have a good one. And again, appreciate the time.
Thank you, Justin.
All right, a special thanks goes out to Justin Labar. You guys can catch him on Twitter at Justin Labar. Pretty easy to remember there. He also is a WWE analyst for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. He also does shows such as Chair Shot Reality and Tribe Live Radio. He's a host. He's an executive producer. He's been featured on NBC Sports. Guy has a laundry list of things he does. We could have been more pleased to have him on the show. Hopefully have him again in the near future, maybe around SummerSlam. Who knows? Maybe earlier, maybe later. You've been listening to The High Spot alongside my tag team partner, Jeff Martin. I am Brian Berger. You can catch us as well on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. We have a lot of things planned. Looking forward to a lot of things to keep you guys informed as well. Check us up on Twitter. A Facebook page is coming up pretty soon. We are in likelihood doing a website and be posting things on iTunes. Currently, we do it on SoundCloud. So a lot of guests coming up pretty soon to look forward to. We'll keep you posted as well. And a lot more things where you can reach us at as well, as developing a YouTube channel. So really excited about what the future holds for this show. This show couldn't be anything without you guys supporting it. So please hit us up again on Twitter. Hate to repeat myself, but I will. at High Spot Podcast for any suggestions, any comments, anything you guys want to hear or you want us to talk about. We'll go out there and we'll try to get the guests. We'll try to get the people to talk about it. But again, Jeff, my tag team partner, and myself, thank you guys for listening to this episode of The High Spot. We'll be back again very shortly. Take care.